Wine is unlike anything else that I can think of.
Sometimes with all the glitz and glamour of Napa, we forget this whole thing is based on families growing grapes, you know?
Potentially, this is a fantastic year, but anything can change on a dime, right?
And everything's good in life, you just have to make a natural judgment, not be too tricky in your mind. I like it, I don't like it.
Davis himself thinks that it's kind of a big load of hooey. People probably use more than maybe two or three descriptors for a wine. He just thinks they're just making it up.
I kind of fired myself. I mean, I couldn't be a one-man operation forever.
There's always something to do. There's replanting, there's barrels, there's maintenance.
Because so many people use mobile bottling lines right now, and everything has to come, the labels, the corks, everything has to come together at the same time and be there when the truck shows up.
Being able to grow up in wine, you have this passion and love for wine and the culture of wine, and everything else sort of pales in comparison.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 249. This week we feature sommelier Belinda Chang at the Chicago Allsauce Tasting at Smith.
This podcast is sponsored by Release Winery. Every wine tells a story. Each growing season, it's our goal to create an artisan Napa Valley wine of exceptional quality. Join us as the story of this ultra-limited wine continues. Learn more at releasewinery.com.
This podcast was recorded during an Alsace tasting in Chicago at Smith. Just before dinner, we interviewed sommelier and James Beard Award winner Belinda Chang. The dinner was exceptional, and we were treated to a spectacular lineup of fantastic wines from Alsace. This program gives you a bit of a background on those special people we call Soms.
Well, we're here in Chicago one more time, and we're at the Loyalist right now.
Welcome.
And I'm here with Belinda Chang, James Beard Award-winning sommelier.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm so excited to be in the woods with you. How fun is this?
We're not hearing any chirping sounds.
No, here, it's a little unnatural.
A little machine sound in the background.
I was hoping we would have vineyards in the background, but here we are. We have a bit of nature.
We could imagine. That's totally cool.
Green screen. Go.
Yeah, exactly. So we're here for a tasting tonight for Alsace.
Yes.
And that's, I'm going to stick with that pronunciation tonight. And
I like
you'll be hosting this for us, correct?
I will. I'll be hosting. We're at one of my favorite newer restaurants here in Chicago called Smith. A chef by the name of John Shields and his wife Karen Shields are going to be putting together an amazing menu to go along with 10 plus wines, all from Alsace, which will nicely reflect Alsace's demographic in terms of winemaking. They make about 90% white. And so when you see an Alsace section in a wine list, you expect to see a lot of white wines, and that's a good thing. I think the other thing, you know, I think that Chef John and Karen are extraordinarily talented, and a lot of critics have said the same thing, but they have a little bit of an easier job today, because I think this is one of the regions that makes some of the most food-friendly wines in all the realm, in all the world. So we did taste all the wines together a couple days ago so they could get their heads wrapped around what we'd be showing everyone at the dinner tonight. And so we'll be tasting these dishes for the first time. They were all custom created for our dinner.
Well, and that brings up kind of a really interesting question for me. When you do go through it, I mean, am I guessing right that you get a fair amount of input yourself?
Yes. Well, you know, we both, John, Karen, and I all come from the same alma mater. So
oh, really?
Here in Chicago, a lot of us who have moved forward in the restaurant business worked at Charlie Trotter's. We were all down the street at 816 West Armitage. He was a real force of nature here during his time. And I oversaw one of the largest cellars in the world while I was there. And they had beautiful kitchens to work in. So a lot of us come, you know, through his legacy. So it's kind of exciting to be with them because of that tonight as well.
And that must have been just, what a job.
Well, I have to tell you, this whole food and wine pairing gig, you know, it sounds like a lot of fun. I think just like being a restaurant critic sounds like a really great job. And there are certainly regions where the wines are extraordinary, but they're not necessarily wines that tend to be amazing with cuisine, especially the kind of beautiful, constructed, complicated dishes we're going to be trying this evening. And I mean complicated in the best way. You know, I love just a hamburger on a great bun with a bit of ketchup, but this would be, you know, a hamburger with a bun with multi-types of flour and many different blends of meat and beautiful things that come from their farm. They have their own farm that they bring some of the ingredients in from. But they get an opportunity tonight. We chose the wine, so we get several of the varietals that are very well known in Alsace. So we're going to have a Cremant d'Alsace, which uses the traditional Champagne grapes, those three, right? Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and Pinot Meunier. And then we're going to have some single varietals, so wines that are made from one grape. Right, so we're going to have a few whites that are 100% Riesling. We'll see Pinot Gris, which used to be known as Tokay Pinot Gris in Alsace until the lawyers got involved, and now it's just called Pinot Gris, which, as we know, is the same grape as used in Pinot Grigio in Italy. But this version is completely unique because of the soils and all of the terroir you find in Alsace. We're also going to have a Pinot Noir, which you don't see, as I mentioned. Most of the grapes in Alsace make white wines, but they do have some pretty extraordinary old vines and beautiful Pinot Noirs grown in unique soils. And we'll have a Gewürztraminer, too, which sometimes can put people into the danger zone, and they get a little scared. I mean, it has accents and lots of syllables.
Yes, it does.
But in the right placement in the meal, a Gewürztraminer is, it's heaven. So we're going to have that with a course, a cheese course, at the end of the meal today, which I think will be fun.
Well, anybody who can pronounce it is off to a good start.
Yeah, and then spelling it is a whole other thing.
No.
I don't know that my iPhone could get the spell check right on Gewürztraminer. I shudder to think what would end up
well, in reality,
being texted.
Half the grapes and half the wines out there, iPhone just kind of goes, huh?
Yeah, I know. We finally got, you know, we have a champagne bottle emoji, but now I want that beautiful, elegant, you know, you always know an Alsace wine on the shelf because it's that signature, very elegant, long neck bottle, and it's almost like a stamp, a guarantee, because this is one of the most regulated winemaking regions in all the world. There are a bunch of people tasting all the wines before they even make it to the shelf to make sure it's perfect.
Sure. And off mic a moment ago, we were talking about the fact that it's not only regulated, but it's an area where the borders have changed every other day, it seems.
So many times.
It's
so
amazing.
All this great evolution. Yeah. And I always think, whenever I'm sort of trying to understand the flavors of a particular wine from a particular region, I always think about the food. So you think about, you know, choucroute and that great sort of Alsace pizza with the cheese and the onions and the ham, you know, delicious things that naturally lead to, I think, great food and wine pairings and great wines.
But in the end, too, it's an area that's kept its own integrity. It's never really changed in terms of the wine. That's, that's been very consistent. Thank God.
Absolutely. I know. Thank God. If we didn't have those beautiful little Hans and Gretel, I mean, these villages are some of the most beautiful places in the entire world. I was reading an article that all the French had voted a village called Kaiserberg as the most beautiful village in all of France. And, you know, it's one of those places where it's little Hansel and Gretel houses and flowers planted everywhere, roses. I mean, you're in heaven when you're in this region of the world.
So a little bit about you, a little bit about your start, and have you always been a big wine fan? Was this an evolution for you to become a sommelier?
It's a great question.
Such a major thing to do that.
Yeah, both my parents emigrated from Taiwan to go to graduate school, and were complete teetotalers. You know, you might have read, you know, the Asians are lacking a particular gene, which I think is a very important gene, and that's one that helps you to process alcohol. So there was virtually no alcohol in my home as I was growing up, let alone one lone bottle of brown wine that was up on the top shelf of the refrigerator, and it was a brand called Lancers, which not everybody remembers, but
well,
it was
do.
Like a fizzy, pink, slightly sweet style of wine, which I think from, you know, the age where I was noticing what was in the refrigerator and what I couldn't reach, which I think was maybe age 4 until I was about 13, that same bottle sat up in the refrigerator. So
wasn't that a Muscat?
It's a Portuguese blend. I think
totally
they use
wrong.
More than
okay.
17 different grape varietals
to
make it. Yeah, so it's a really funky blend. I don't think I ever at that moment tasted that bottle. There were bottles of Blue Nun around, all kinds of, you know, the fun stuff from decades back. And You know, I was never really into wine, but I really was into food. You know, my mom had gone to culinary school in Taiwan, and so we had a great tradition of great dinner parties all the time, and I think that led me into the restaurant business, despite the fact that I was studying biochemistry at Rice University in Houston on my way to something very different. But as often happens, we fall in love with wine, we fall in love with food, we fall in love with the sous chef at the hot restaurant in town.
But it's not unusual for people in chemistry, in healthcare, that kind of thing. It's very common in the wine industry, from what I've seen anyway.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we love to drink. And I think there's a great component in learning about wine. And I always tell my friends, you know, the one thing that I think makes wine so interesting and engaging and makes a lifetime of study and a lifetime of fun and a lifetime of enjoyment is that, you know, it's not just about what's in the glass. There's a great geographical story like there is in Alsace. You know, there's a great terroir story. There's a great geological story. There's a great history in all of these regions that we're drinking these great old school wines from, especially in old world regions. So it's like it never ends. If there's a subject you're interested in, you can tie that into wine somehow, feminism, whatever it is. And there's a wine angle. So, you know, I fell in love with first the sous chef and then, you know, wine and all the expensive wine books that I then filled my shelves with and then my eventual move into restaurants instead of going further into, you know, whatever it is, I thought I was going to be a research chemist or something along those lines. And I haven't turned back and I haven't regretted a moment.
How did the sous chef work out?
Well, okay. That's a great question. We moved around the country a little bit and he's back in Houston.
So oh, okay.
All's well.
I had to ask the question. It was there.
You know? Yeah, no. My love at first sight moment was with the wine, maybe not so much with the sous chef.
That's okay. You had your priorities in the right order.
Yeah.
At least for some wine drinkers.
Yeah, that's how it goes. All's good.
So your journey to becoming a sommelier, again, I you know, for a person who loves wine but has never taken anywhere near that approach,
yeah,
the study, the intensity, the time involved, that's really dedicating a huge part of your life.
I think it's fun to be a nut about wine. So, you know, as I mentioned, my path was going into restaurants, and I realized, sure, it's fun to be a bartender. I did that. It's fun to be a maitre d'. I did that. I actually even worked as a line cook in this restaurant called Cafe Annie in Houston, which was, you know, 5-star, 5-diamond at that time, and the one. It was the shizzle, you know, the bomb diggity.
Nice.
And the one thing I really was attracted to was the fact that that particular chef, he was a PhD biochemist who became a chef, was just obsessed with wine. I mean, the people who were always the superstars when they came in the door were the winemakers from all over the world that would come to visit when they happened to be in town in Houston. And I think the other piece of it that I really loved was this particular chef, and I don't think all of them are, and it's too bad. I wish they all were. Just loved to put together the wine dinners, and I just remember him putting out a plate with every ingredient that could potentially be used to comprise a dish. And this is the first time I saw a chef do this. Like a plate of mushrooms, a plate of green onions, a plate of lamb, just completely with just salt and pepper, and then have all the wines that we were going to try to highlight through the course of the dinner, and then it would be putting all the spoons of ingredients together to compose the menu. I mean, there was so much love and thought and time and care put into putting together the ultimate dinner experience for the guests that were going to come to experience it that, you know, that really had an impact on me, and I wanted to do that forever. And then a couple years later, I think 2 years later, I saw a cover of the Wine Spectator magazine that said that Charlie Trotter's in Chicago is the greatest food and wine experience in the world. So I thought to myself, well, that's the best. And this is what I want to do with my life. I'm going to send him a fax. And that's what I did.
Really?
I went to Kinko's before it was FedEx Kinko's and sent a fax over to that restaurant. And by the time I got home from the Kinko's, there was a message on my answer machine. Remember those with the cassette tape?
I do. Once again, I'm old enough to.
Yeah. Mm. So there was a message on the answer machine asking me to call and arrange an interview.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, so that's how I ended up a cellar rat and a food runner and all of that, and eventually ended up the wine director in my first wine director position.
Well, it just goes to show, to have the initiative to do something like that, what can
happen? Yeah, and read a ton. I mean, I was at that moment reading anything I could get my hands on, you know, the weekly wine articles in the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times and every issue of every magazine. I think I was sitting at Borders Books back then, maybe on Kirby in Houston, and just reading sort of every single new release magazine that had anything to do with wine. And I had such a passion for it, and it made it more fun, and it made a lifetime of greatness and stuff and travel and friends and great dinners like this for me.
Mm-hmm. Clearly you have a passion for it and an enthusiasm.
How can you not?
No, I'm totally with you.
When someone tells me they only drink beer, I just get upset.
Not that there's anything wrong with beer.
No, I'm an equal opportunity drinker.
That's a good way to be.
Wine is it for me.
Let me ask a question. You're talking about magazines, and I'm assuming you're referring to books as well.
Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, are there any books you'd recommend to our listeners that would be really good for them to
read?
Yes. I mean, there's the Oxford and those kind of things, but anything otherwise?
I'll tell you what, my favorite wine, and the one I still recommend to anyone who asks, is Wine for Dummies. I just think that series is really extraordinary, and I love it. And I think there are actually these days so many great wine websites, so no cost, which is great. I think Wine Folly is really excellent. She puts together really amazing maps, and she's a graphic design background, so great graphics and covers just, you know, sort of every topic you can imagine that's fun in wine. I love Decanter as well. That's the old school one. They're very British and very upper crust. And I love to read things that give us just a little bit to consume every single day. So I read The Wine Business, which is a little industry insider-y. However, it's really neat stuff that, you know, you drink champagne. It's interesting to learn more about the champagne business. You love Rioja. It's fun to learn more about the Rioja business, or what's going on with, you know, the committees that run what's happening in Alsace. I think all of that is fun to just get a little tidbit every day.
Yeah, well, there's so many aspects. I mean, you got the countries that make wine, you've got the aspects of making wine, the styles, the whites, the reds, the sparkling.
The politics, all of it.
Politics are a huge part of this too, especially when it comes to AVAs or DOCGs, that kind of thing. It's crazy.
These are big businesses.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's any other business like it, would you say?
I mean, I sometimes like to liken some styles of wine to what happens in fashion, right? Which I think is a really easy one for people to understand, especially when you're looking at Alsace, for instance. You know, you might drink their Grand Cru Riesling, which is their couture gown that takes all the hours and gets all the great treatment, and, you know, the real Chef de Cave is in there. And then you might also drink, you know, their Pinot Blanc, which might be a little simpler, or their Pinot d'Auxerrois, which is a blend, which is the one that, you know, maybe an apprentice was working on. So, and the prices will be reflected there as well. So you can drink or wear couture. You can also, you know, drink or wear Vera Wang from H&M, you know, instead of her wedding gown from her couture collection.
I just want to point out, when you say you could wear, you don't really mean me.
So oh, yeah. Well, you know, hey, I don't know what you like to wear at home, but
it's true. You don't need to know.
I think you'd look great in a gown.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That's very kind of you.
With a glass of Alsace wine.
Of course. Absolutely. Which brings me to that question. Why Alsace? Why does that appeal to you specifically?
So this is a region that's been near and dear to my heart for a good bit of my career. When I worked in New York City for Danny Meyer, I was the wine director at the Modern, and our chef was Gabriel Kreuther, who's an Alsace native. And Alsace, like Paris, is just an intense, awesome food city, and some of the most renowned and successful chefs, especially French chefs in the U.S., come from this region because they have so many Michelin 1, 2, and 3-starred restaurants, just sort of epic places where people would go to train. So there, again, is that sort of Alsace food and wine thing together. It just makes sense. So I had one of the biggest Alsace cellars in the land while I was at the Modern, and I really came to understand that style of wine. You know, it's not kind of a one-trick pony like some regions where, you know, the white is always Chardonnay, for instance, or the red is always Cabernet. I mean, this is a diversity of soils. This is a diversity of styles. You know, that Alsace wine route is quite long if you drive it all the way from north to south, and you're going to find almost everything, right? It's not as if the Riesling from Alsace tastes like this. It tastes like where it comes from all those different villages from north to south, based on the composition of the soils and, you know, the sunlight that you have, the amount of rain that you have. And so it's really fun. It's like you could do one designer, a wardrobe with just one designer, but that's a little boring. But you could do a whole wardrobe and a whole wine cellar with just Alsace wines. You definitely wouldn't get bored. And that definitely appealed to me quite a bit. I was also in a restaurant that Alsace pizza that I mentioned is called a tart flambé, where when you walked into the restaurant at any time of day, whether we had guests at the moment or not, all you could smell was this delicious pizza baking with onions and ham, and all you wanted was a great glass of Pinot Gris from Alsace to go with it. I mean, it's like cereal and milk. You just, like, you needed it when
only
you walked in the
better.
Door. Yeah, so I was fortunate enough to meet all these great Alsace winemakers while I was there and take a trip there as well. So there's never a moment when there's not a bottle of one of these wines in my tiny little refrigerator in my apartment.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Everybody has a lot of areas that they enjoy and they're sort of close to their heart. But this is, your enthusiasm is amazing.
Oh, thank you. I mean, it has everything. I've been so lucky in my career to be able to visit regions all over the world. I think there's not many that I haven't visited at this point, but this is one that has everything. It has the beautiful idyllic towns with medieval castles and wonderful people and a Christmas market where the whole region smells like spices and baking and pumpkin pie, even though they don't have pumpkin pie out there. That's ours. And then all of these great restaurants where the wines are a perfect fit and you really don't need anything else. And I think that's pretty rare, right? Like you go to some winemaking regions and, at the end of the day of tasting, all you want is beer, right? Because it's just hard. Like maybe they specialize in reds with thick skins and they're very tannic. I was so excited when I first got invited to go to Alsace and I invited a friend who's not in the restaurant business. And I'm like, okay, it's going to be 9 days. We're going to fit in as many wineries as we can each day, but don't worry, we're not going to hurt you. If we were doing this, and I love Argentinian Malbec, but if we were doing this in Argentina, we would probably have our teeth fall out at some point. But here we're drinking all these whites that have really excellent acidity and want you have you going back for more. And the food is going to be great, so this is going to be the greatest wine trip of your life.
Brings up a real question for me, the alcohol content of these particular wines. What are you really looking at these?
Well, like with all the regions in the world, that's been on the rise just because of this global warming factor where, the sugar levels at harvest are higher and then that gets converted into alcohols. But you're going to see from 10%, and you will definitely not see the levels that you would see in Napa Valley, California, for instance. Like I've had a Zinfandel where it said 16 on the label percent alcohol, that is, and I'm pretty sure it was 25, right? It was like a port, but wow, did I taste the sunshine in the glass? But these are going to be these grape varietals that tend to be harvested with good acidity and a little less sugar. So although that's an important thing to mention about Alsace wines, there's with this big diversity of styles, there are people that make bone dry styles. We're going to try some wines from a great legendary estate called Trimbach, where it's very rare that they leave any residual sugar or RS in the wines. And then we're going to taste from people like Zind Humbrecht and Domaine Weinbach, who are also very well known for their dessert style wines. So we'll have bone dry. We'll also have something with quite a bit of sweetness. This is a rock star lineup for you and for us tonight. I wouldn't have showed up otherwise.
And neither would I.
Yeah. And the fun thing, too, is these wines all age really well. If you go to visit the wineries there, there are people that are going to show you family charts that practically go back to, the founder of Rome. And you'll see casks, beautiful wood casks where they're aging the wines that will be 100, 200, 300 years old. So because of the unique situation of where the vineyards are located and how the wines are made, these get better and better with age. 10, 20, 30, 40 years is not unknown. And unlike most wine dinners that I attend where we're tasting the new releases, right? If we were to go to another wine dinner, next week, it might all be 2015 wines or even 2016 wines. Today, we're going back to 1994. So, yeah. And,
and like
we don't
that.
Have anything on the table that's 2016. I think we have a few 2015s. We have a 2013, a 2010. So it just shows kind of the versatility of these wines, and they're fun to collect. And can I tell you a secret?
Sure.
They're always the best deal at a wine auction.
Really?
I don't know why. I think people just, only the people who know, and this is a good thing to know. These days, I can say this, that the Chinese are buying all the Bordeaux, and there's all kinds of crazy stuff going on. But I always find that you can find a great deal on aged Alsace wine at an auction.
That's a nice thing to know.
That out.
It's a secret. We're not going to tell anyone.
Okay, don't tell anyone.
I know we need to wrap this up in a minute here because it's getting near 6:30, but just two more questions.
Of course.
Are you at this point teaching or are you?
So I'm the wine official. Well, I'm going to be the wine personality for a new app called Collide, which is a collection of personalities. You'll find Mariah Carey and Cyndi Lauper, and I'll start posting videos there soon. So if you're looking for some fun 2-minute blurbs, I'll be there. And you can just download the app. The app is free.
Great. Please send me a link if you don't mind.
I will. I would absolutely. Thanks.
That's fabulous.
Yeah.
So, Belinda, this is great talking to you. And I wish we could
My
go a little
pleasure.
Bit longer, but we have a dinner coming up shortly.
And we're getting a little hungry and thirsty.
We are.
So.
I agree. But thank you for taking the time. But one other thing, too, if anybody wants to find out about you, is there a website they can go to? Or
you can
email?
Find me on Instagram or social media @Belinda_Chicago. and you can see what I'm up to and what I'm drinking.
And tonight she's up to all sauce. Thanks very much for your
time. My pleasure. Thank you.
Cheers. You can learn more about Belinda on social media and Instagram at Belinda_Chicago. Learn more about Smith at smithandtheloyalist.com.
This podcast is sponsored by Release Winery. Every wine tells a story. Each growing season, it's our goal to create an artisan Napa Valley wine of exceptional quality. Join us as the story of this ultra-limited wine continues. Learn more at releasewinery.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our intern is John Chacone. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2017.